Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest in the OIES podcast series. My name is James Henderson. I'm chairman of the gas program at OIES, and I'm delighted to have with me today Mike Fullwood, back from his holidays, Jack Sharple, back from his holidays, and with us today, we also have Anouk Honoré, who's going to be discussing the situation in Europe over the coming winter. I'll date stamp the podcast. We're recording on the 1st of September. We've been away for a while, for a couple of weeks, and in that time, quite a lot has happened as a result of the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the consequences of that. And so, Mike, let me come to you first and ask, well, now you're back from your holidays, how shocked have you been by what's happened to prices while you've been away? And can you talk us through where we are on prices now and what the key drivers have been?
Yes, well, thank you, Jim. It seems like I've not been away because prices have gone back down to where they were before I'm on holiday. So, yeah, it's been a roller coaster ride. I mean, obviously, the jump in prices when the flows on Nord Stream 1 started to go down in June, and they sort of went to a sort of a new level. And then sort of in the last couple of weeks, they shot up when there was an announcement that Nord Stream 1 was going to be down for 3 days. I mean, it's, and Jack will probably talk about that, it's not a lot of gas at the low rates was flowing for 3 days. But I guess the fear was, or it still is, that it may not come back on again, which would have serious consequences. The price have now sort of gone back down to where they were 2 weeks ago, of the very, very high levels. They've sort of gone down almost 40-50% since the peaks of a few days ago. And it's also important to point out that the NBP price is still running at a third less than the TTF price. This big gap opened up between UK prices and Dutch prices sort of in the middle of the summer, as the UK is still continuing to export a lot of gas down the interconnector from BBL to Belgium and Netherlands.
So, Mike, can I ask you to be specific a bit? Can you tell us, you know, what the price is now in euros per megawatt hour and what the peak was while we were kind of away on holiday?
Yeah, as of this morning, I think it opened at sort of last night's close, about 230, 235 euros a megawatt hour. It peaked a couple of days ago at about 340 euros a megawatt hour. But the 230 is back to what it was on the 17th, 18th of August. So it's gone through that sort of big spurt and then sort of come back down again.
Okay, and before we talk more in detail about Europe, can we talk a little bit about Asia? I mean, what's happening with prices in Asia? And, you know, are we seeing any kind of reaction in Asia to high prices?
Yeah, I mean, the JKM or Asia spot prices, I mean, they're still a lot closer to the sort of the NBP level of price, which is the also pretty close to the LNG Northwest Europe delivered price. So they're not following TTF up as much as that. That's obviously still very high. In terms of the sort of flows, I mean, it's almost a continuation of what we've seen over for most of this year. I mean, China is down, continued to be down on the previous year. It's down 20% year on year, sort of 14 to 15 BCM lower the first 8 months. India, Pakistan, Bangladesh is down as well. They're down about 4 to 5 BCM, which is a 14% fall. But the Southeast Asia is continuing to sort of boom ahead. So flows there are up, sort of about 35%, almost 3 to 4 BCM in the first 8 months. So it's a mixed picture in the sort of the Asian markets.
But essentially, you know, prices are dragging LNG to Europe still.
Yes. I mean, it's also a fairly continuous, sort of very steady stream of LNG sort of coming to Europe. I mean, Europe as a whole, just check on the number there. Europe as a whole, the first 8 months is 37 BCM up, which is almost 70% rise. Around 32 of that is the EU. There's plus 5 for the UK and Turkey, sort of flattish compared to the previous year. So at that sort of rate, 8 months, it's not likely to be such a big increase in the last 3 months of the year because that's when imports into Europe started to rise. But we're probably just about on target for Europe as a whole to meet a 50 BCM increase. That's not necessarily the same as the EU. The EU will be a bit lower yeah, maybe in the mid to low 40 BCM increase, with the UK sort of making up the difference.
Okay, well, thanks for bringing us onto that topic of supply. Jack, let me come to you and talk us through a little bit about what's going on with supply into Europe now and in the last couple of weeks. Obviously, the hot topic today has been the shutdown of Nord Stream 1 for further maintenance. But give us an update on that, but also what else you see on the Russian flow situation.
Well, if we start with Russia, you know, Mike has been discussing the year-on-year change in LNG imports. In the year-on-year change in Russian pipeline gas supply to Europe, we've seen a decline of about 8.4 BCM year-on-year just in August. So in the month just ending, Europe received just under 3.5 BCM by pipeline from Russia, down from just under 12 BCM in August last year. So that's a 70% drop year on year. And that is in line with a gradual decrease of pipeline flows from Russia that started back in the spring. So back in March, we were getting 340 million cubic meters per day from Russia. By May, it was 260. And then in August, it was down to 110. So then, you know, when Mike made reference to, you know, Nord Stream going offline for 3 days, I think Mike is absolutely right when he says that, you know, that the impact was primarily on price rather than physical flow, given that Europe was only getting 30 million cubic meters per day via Nord Stream before it was taken offline yesterday. But as Mike said, the fear is either what happens if it doesn't come back on, or indeed it's just a reminder to the market that supply could be taken offline at relatively short notice at any point during the winter. So it definitely keeps everybody on their toes. In terms of pipeline supplies from others, the pipeline imports from Norway, from North Africa, Algeria and Libya, and Azerbaijan in the past month were all broadly similar to August of last year. In the second half of August, flows from Azerbaijan via TAP were affected by maintenance. So instead of getting just over 30 million cubic meters per day, we were getting about 23 million cubic meters per day. But that appears to be over now. In terms of the pipeline imports from Norway, obviously some of the news headlines recently about unplanned maintenance at the Troll field affecting some Norwegian output, that is being balanced to a certain extent by increased output at other fields, but we should be aware that there is more maintenance coming down the line for September. And then finally, the imports from Algeria and Libya. Obviously, there are four pipelines connecting North Africa to continental Europe, but one of those is not being used, the transit pipeline via Morocco from Algeria to Spain. But those volumes are at least on the remaining three pipelines are at least holding up. Obviously, the Libyan production is still impacted by ongoing developments there and instability, but Algerian volumes are holding up. Finally, one other thing on the supply side I would add to Mike. The August European LNG imports are up by just over 5 BCM, so that's 52% year on year. So that is, to a certain extent, offsetting some of what we are not getting from Russia.
Okay, thanks. That's very clear, Jack. And so, Mike, let me just kind of come back to you on that LNG point. I mean, another thing that's been going on, obviously, in Europe is the kind of plans for new LNG import terminals. Can you talk us a little bit about that? Has that had an impact yet? When do we expect it to have an impact?
Yes, I mean, I think the focus has certainly been about Northwest Europe, particularly Germany. We do have the new floating regas terminal coming on in the Netherlands, Eemshaven. It's supposed to be on maybe September, October. That seems to be a little bit of a simpler one. I don't think there's that much pipe to lay to get that to the main sort of Dutch gas transmission system. And then we got potentially, is it five or six sort of new terminals coming on in Germany? FSRUs, a couple at Wilhelmshaven, a couple at Lubmin. Lubmin is close to where Nord Stream sort of lands. And then there's the names now, Brunsbüttel and Stade maybe. So there's six sort of coming on. And the German ones in total, if they're all up and running, is about 20 million tonnes per annum, about 30 BCM. And then the Eemshaven one is 6 million tonnes, about 8 BCM. But they're not all coming on, you know, absolutely at once in the beginning of the year. The German one's sort of phased really throughout 2023. So sort of the additional capacity in 2023, you know, you're looking at maybe it's, you know, 30 BCM in total. We may only see about 16 to 20 BCM of that sort of phase throughout the year. So obviously the hope is that that will bring LNG into Germany, especially to offset any the big decline in Russia flows or even zero Russia flows. However, it's not necessarily unalloyed good news because, as I said earlier on, one of the things that's been happening, and it's still happening at quite a high rate, is the UK has been exporting down the interconnector and BBL to Belgium, Netherlands, which is being sort of passed through into Germany. And to the extent that Germany particularly attracts more LNG, it largely has to take that LNG away from somebody else, and the somebody else may well be the UK. So the UK is only importing LNG to a significant degree this year, so it can re-export the molecules. So, yes, there should be some additional supply, but you shouldn't count on it all being additive to the supply going into Germany.
Okay, that's very interesting indeed. Thanks. And kind of raises something of a red flag for the winter. But Jack, let me come back to you, because I think the critical issue for the winter, or one of the critical issues certainly, is levels of storage. So this is your perennial topic, but I think there's been some pretty good news. So I'm hoping you're looking a bit more positive on the whole storage front. So could you give us, first of all, the overall picture for the EU?
Yeah, sure. And you're right. I am looking slightly more positive than I have been recently. Back in late July, when Mike and I published the last gas quarterly, I wrote that if we manage to continue at the mid-July injection rates, that in the 6 weeks between mid-July and the end of August, we would hopefully meet our 80% storage target. And indeed, EU-wide storage surpassed 80% of its capacity on the 29th of August. I think that's quite an achievement, really, considering the prevailing high prices and the curtailments of flows via Nord Stream. To break that down a little bit, there are 12 EU member states that have large-scale storage capacity of at least 20 terawatt hours. Now, six of those 12 already have stocks higher than 80% capacity. Another three have stocks that are 70 to 80% of capacity. So they're, working towards meeting that 80% target. And then we have three laggards, if you like. So in Austria, storage is only 66% of its capacity. In Hungary, it's only 63% of capacity. And in Latvia, it's only 55% of capacity. I think each of those has a different story behind it. Obviously, we've seen with the Hungarians signing a new contract with Gazprom for additional supply during the coming winter. And of course, Hungary sits at the end of the extensions to the Turkish Stream pipeline. So clearly the Hungarians are feeling pretty secure in getting their pipeline gas during the winter. With Latvia, it's a different story. We are seeing now no pipeline Russian gas going to any of the three Baltic states or Finland. Latvia was the last to stop importing Russian gas by pipeline. So clearly, if they are going to be building up any further storage stocks, they're reliant pretty well on accessing LNG via Lithuania. But I think the one that's probably of greatest concern in Central Europe is Austria, just because it has large storage capacity, a very liquid traded market, and is very well connected to its neighbours. So that's definitely one to keep an eye on. There are another five EU member states that have smaller storage capacity of between 3 and 10 terawatt hours, and four of those five have already reached between 75 and 95% of their capacity. And again, in the region, only Bulgaria, with 60% of its storage capacity filled, is a laggard there. So that's another one to keep an eye on. And then finally, just to put them in order by relative importance, let's say, the largest stocks currently held by country are Germany with 205 terawatt hours, Italy at about 160, France at about 120, and the Netherlands at 107. So they're the big beasts of European storage. Finally, one other thing I would say in Central Europe, Czechia and Slovakia have storage about 80% full, and they would be impacted by an extended curtailment of Nord Stream flows or indeed further cuts in flows via Ukraine. The same obviously applies to Austria. And instead of looking at percentage terms, if you look at how much is held in storage in absolute numbers, Austria currently has about as much in storage as Czechia and Slovakia combined. But they are definitely markets to focus on because obviously they don't have the access to LNG that some of the other European countries do.
OK, well, I'm going to come to that in just a second. But before we move on, obviously injection continues. Can you just tell us at an overall level, we're at 80% now. things are going well. By the 1st of October and by the 1st of November, what would you sort of estimate we may get to in terms of storage levels?
Well, in recent days, we've seen just under 300 million cubic meters per day being injected. That's the very latest data that we have for the end of August. Obviously, that will slow down a little bit as the temperatures start to fall a little bit and seasonal gas demand starts to pick up. But if we can at least maintain 250 million cubic meters per day during September, that's one BCM every 4 days. So, you know, if we can even push a little bit higher, 1 BCM every 3 days, you could be looking at 8 to 10 BCM of storage injections Europe-wide during September. It would be highly optimistic to suggest the same again in October. So I think the absolute best that we could hope for would be somewhere between 15 and 20 BCM of additional volumes going into storage before the start of winter. 20 BCM over the next 2 months would take us pretty close to full European capacity. I think that would be optimistic. I think somewhere, you know, if we could achieve another 12 to 15 in the next 2 months, then that would be pretty good, really, and take us closer to sort of 90 to 95% of storage capacity being filled.
Okay, great. I mean, that's very good detail. Thank you. And quite a clear picture of where we are and where we're heading. But I think as another number of commentators have pointed out, you know, storage is just one part of the equation. And clearly, if Russian supplies go down, there is still some significant exposure. And Mike, I know you've been doing quite a lot of work on particularly Central and Eastern Europe as the most exposed if Russian supplies go down. Can you talk us a little bit about sort of the highlights of that research and what your kind of key findings are?
Yeah, I think as we talked about in quarterly views, the impact on demand or demand curtailment is heavily concentrated, if there are no or very low Russia flows, heavily concentrated in Germany and other Central European countries. You know, as Jack mentioned, Czechia, Slovakia, Austria, Hungary is really ones that the mostly impacted. Obviously, there's been talk about France, but there's very little the French can do to move gas from France into Germany. A little bit moves into Belgium, but then some goes the other way as well. So in terms of looking at the sort of the capacity, the infrastructure constraints, then if you wrap the Belgium Netherlands into that sort of Central European area, you've got a sort of an island of gas supply and infrastructure, which if there are no Russia flows, largely has to be fed by gas coming into Belgium, Netherlands and the new energy import terminals into Germany. You probably don't get much respite of gas flowing upwards from Italy into that region, or even, I guess, depends on how much might flow into Hungary via Turkstream. There's not much sort of cavalry coming to the rescue from the south, so you're heavily dependent on sort of those flows from Norway into Belgium, Netherlands, Germany, LNG into Belgium, Netherlands, and next year Germany, and then UK flows, UK importing more LNG. There's a land bridge into Belgium, Netherlands. So that's where you're really looking at the supply coming in. And based on the capacities, if there were, for example, no Russia flows in the winter, there's simply not enough capacity to supply the market. Now, you can effectively empty storage, and in a mild winter, you might just about squeak through by reducing storage to zero. But then, what our research shows is you're really kicking the can down the street, because with no or low Russia flows next summer, the ability to refill storage is gone. I mean, this 80-90% EU target would be impossible to reach with no Russia flows. So if this winter is not looking too great, winter 23-24 is looking absolutely dire if there are no or very low Russia flows. And it's heavily concentrated in those sort of central European countries, including particularly in Germany.
Okay, well, that's really interesting. And as I say, you are doing research on this, and we'll do a separate podcast, I think, when your research is published. But I think important for listeners to understand that it really is a kind of a concentrated and focused concern on that region and the infrastructure within that region, which is really interesting. And we're going to talk a bit more about Germany in a minute. But before I come to Anoop, Jack, can I just come back to you one last time? You know, we've talked about supply into Europe. We've talked about injections into storage. At an overall level, can you put that together for us and tell us what that means for implied consumption and what's been happening effectively to demand over the last few months?
Yeah, so I think August is a good month to focus in on, obviously the most recent month, where gross supply, so that is production plus pipeline imports plus LNG imports, in the month that's just ended was 33 BCM. Now that was down 3.5 BCM year on year. So clearly there is a constraint on the supply side. But then if we factor in the storage injections, then actually that figure falls to about 15.5 BCM, which is down by 20%, 4 BCM year on year. So storage injections are higher than where they were last year, despite sort of the curtailment of on the supply side, storage injections being higher, which leaves a much lower sort of implied consumption. So even with this much tighter market and high prices, storage injections are continuing. And that is really a sign of political push and fears for the coming winter. So that links us back to what we've said about Nord Stream 1, that, you know, this is only a 3-day halt of supplies that were 30 million cubic meters a day. So theoretically, that's 90 million cubic meters that Europe didn't get. But the market impact on prices was much greater. And this all plays into this fear of the coming winter, let's say. And it also ties into Mike's research as well about how Europe copes if Russian supplies curtail through the winter. So the headline figure is very much that in this tight market, storage injections are continuing, and so therefore consumption must be constrained.
Okay, well, this is a nice little segue to you, Anoop. Welcome back to the podcast. You haven't been on for a while, so it's great to speak to you again. And I think we're particularly interested, of course, in what Jack's been saying about demand already being in decline, but really about what the plans are for this winter. Mike's highlighted the exposure of the central European region. But in terms of the overall plans, what's the EU been saying over the past 6 months up to now about what the plans are if we go into a situation where Russian gas is completely halted?
Okay, so let me get started with a few words on the REPowerEU, maybe. We had the second version in May, which gives us a set of proposals to reduce the fossil fuel dependence from Russia, and especially focusing on natural gas. In this document, we had measures with impact on the short term, the medium term, and the long term. Looking at the short term measures, we had the diversification of supply, which Jack and Mike have covered in previous OIS papers, but we also had a focus on cutting down demand. Now, if you remember, in the first version, we had a 2022 target of 38 BCM reduction compared to last year. That specific target seems to have been written out. It's disappeared from the new document. And now we have short-term measures of 40 BCM fuel switching and 10 BCM coming from behavioral change from our customers. There's an additional mention of possible industrial curtailment over the winter. Now, if you let me put things into perspective, maybe over the first 7 months, the EU gas demand has been down by about 27 BCM, which means that keeping in mind the relative resilience of gas demand in 2021, we're probably on track for a decline of about 40 to 50 BCM just on the back of high prices, consumer behavior change, and also milder temperature, at least at the beginning of this year.
So that's quite encouraging in the sort of overall numbers. But is that enough? I mean, if there's a full disruption of Russian gas, then what happens over the winter months? Do we need to curtail demand more, or are we doing enough?
Well, it's encouraging, yes and no. It also comes at a cost. But this may not be enough. The European Commission has done some work with ENTSO-G and is mentioning some numbers regarding the potential gap between supply and demand in case of full disruption of Russian gas for this year. And they mention around 30 BCM gap in an average winter, but 45 BCM in a colder one, or even a larger gap if the winter is exceptionally cold. And this is taking into account non-Russian LNG and pipeline supply to be at a high level. So the really option that is left on the table is to reduce gas demand further.
And so has the Commission kind of come up with a set of plans about how to do that, how to reduce gas demand?
They have indeed. In July, they have published their Save Gas for Winter package, if you want, which is essentially a coordinated demand reduction response for this winter. The member states have agreed to voluntarily reduce gas demand by about 15% from August 2022 to March 2023. If that happens, there would be an equivalent of about 45 BCM saving, gas savings.
So overall, then, that looks pretty good. But if I understand correctly, there were a number of countries that weren't too keen on signing up to that. And there is a sort of a few exemptions and exceptions. Can you just talk us through that? And also talk us through how easy it really is going to be to get that 45 BCM saving.
So the voluntarily part has been relatively straightforward. The thing is that the targets would be binding in a supply emergency. And that is really has been the key of contention with a wide range of exemptions that have been allowed for reduction or even an opt-out of some of the binding targets. So for instance, the markets that are not connected to the EU, other EU countries' gas networks would be exempted by these binding targets, quite logically. That's, for instance, the case of Ireland, Malta, or Cyprus. The countries that have a limited availability to send gas to the other EU countries can also request a lower target, provided that they do export what they can. So that includes Spain and Portugal, for instance. We have other exemptions, for instance, for countries that have overachieved an EU target for filling their gas storage by August. They can request weaker targets, and that could potentially apply to a dozen of countries, including Germany. And finally, we have countries that can ask to adjust the target if they use gas as a feedstock in critical industries, like energy-intensive steelmaking, for instance. So your second part of your question, which is how doable is it or how feasible is it? Well, I think this is it's on the right track, but this is going to be very challenging in my view. First of all, the switching to other fuels is already happening, both in the power sector and in the industry. Many producers have already substituted fuels where possible and also optimized their production level. Now, the key question in my head are, what if nuclear and hydro continue to remain low this winter, especially during days where we have limited wind availability? What if we have a very cold winter? What happens if this 15% or actual reduction that we get is not enough? Will we see member states cooperate, or will they ask for further derogation? There is a really question in my head that, yes, reducing demand this winter is a necessity, but the practicalities of a coordinated action will be, I think, very complex to put in place.
Okay, that's really interesting. And yeah, obviously it's going to be difficult, and individual member states are kind of have their own individual issues they want to address. I'd like to come to one of those, I mean, the biggest, because everyone's really focusing on Germany. And talk about its plans for the winter, because I think there's a very good example of how countries that are exposed are now thinking about what they're going to do over the next 6 months. So can you give us a quick, very brief intro to the German gas market, just to start with?
A very brief intro. This is the largest gas market in Europe. It's the largest importer of Russian pipeline gas in volumes, though they're not fully dependent on Russia. And most critically, almost half of Germany's 43 million households are heated with natural gas, which will be a key component of the problems, the tension this winter. Now, just to give you a brief overview, gas demand this year has gone down by about 15% in the first half of the year, though it has most likely been due to a very warm weather, accounting probably for half of that decline. More worryingly is that electricity generation, which should have gone down dramatically thanks to various measures, which we can talk about, is not going down by as much as expected. And in May and in July, it has especially been fairly high due to external factors such as the French nuclear, which is not producing as much as expected. And therefore, there's been some exports of electricity to France, but also the water level on the Rhine River, for instance, that complicates the transport of coal by boat to the new plants that needs to be restarted.
Okay, so gas demand in the power sector has been higher than one might have hoped. And I think in June, the German government, I think, declared an alert, did they not? Or they announced some kind of initial triggering of a security plan. Can you talk us through that, and also talk us through what the three kind of main pillars of their plan are?
So indeed, they declared actually the second stage out of three of their national gas supply security plan. That essentially means that consumers have to prepare for further rising in prices and also possible supply bottlenecks. But at this stage, we're still largely relying on market mechanisms. Now, regarding the three pillars, what I think are the three pillars, well, first of all, you have the construction of LNG terminals, and Mike has already mentioned that. A few terminals, too, essentially are expected to be operational this winter. And if they are, they could account for around 16% of the country's annual demand. So potentially helping with the winter, or at least the second half of the winter supply problems. There's other FSRUs, three other FSRUs projects that are in the pipeline and expected for next winter, and also two permanent onshore sites. In addition to the LNG terminals, there's also the filling up of storage. In July, the government has introduced new targets. So the first target being to fill storages by 75% by today, the 1st of September. That has been reached ahead of schedule. But the two further targets, 85% by the beginning of October and 95% by November, seems to be a bit more complicated, a bit harder to reach, according to the Federal Network Agency, the Bundesnetzagentur. And finally, the third pillar, which I think is the third pillar of their measures, is restarting their coal-fired plants. The new replacement power plant law is expected to help reduce gas for power by allowing about 10 gigawatts of older hard coal and lignite plants, also fuel oil actually, to run this winter. Caveat to that, so far there seems to have been a fairly slow state of return, slow rate of return, due to a combination of technical issues, their old plant, organizational issues. I mentioned the problem with the low water level on the Rhine, and also economic problems that have been mentioned by the operators.
Okay, and you haven't mentioned nuclear yet. Is there anything going on with the nuclear plants?
That is a very good question, Jim. Yes, it definitely has been. There have been talks about possible extension of the runtime of the remaining nuclear plants, though probably only one would be really concerned, the one in Bavaria. But having said that, it's very hard to tell. There's been some back and forth on these topics between the energy, the environmental, the finance, or the foreign ministers. They seem to be fairly unable to keep a central message, let alone to agree on a policy. So yes, there has been talks. Exactly what is going to happen regarding nuclear, in my view, is still a question mark. But a political decision would be needed fairly soon if nuclear is going to help this winter.
Okay. And just finally, the German government and various kind of ministers have been making various statements, trying to prepare the population for a tough winter. Have they essentially, had any success with their campaign? I mean, are people focused on saving energy? And also, have they got any relief packages in terms of helping out consumers with prices?
So there's been relief packages. The government is mentioning around 30 billion euros that have been used to ease the financial burdens on the citizens, with probably more to come. But having said that, this has also come alongside the controversial levy on gas, aimed at supporting the struggling gas importers, and that is being paid by the customers. Now, regarding the campaign to save energy this winter, Yes, there seems to be a campaign. Just late August, the German government has introduced a package of energy-saving provisions for businesses and state entities, expected to take effect in September. We've had warnings of likely gas cutoff next winter by the network agency. The government had renewed calls to brace for a hard winter, to be prepared to make sacrifices, and expecting the small customers to play their part, to do their part. So examples of concrete measures is that in the coming heating period, the maximum temperature in public buildings would be limited to 19 degrees, for instance. And there's a hope that the businesses are going to apply the same measures. At the regional or city level, there's also been some decisions or some measures that have been mentioned. For instance, rationing warm water or even lowering the maximum temperature in district heating network. Exactly how this is going to impact the demand for gas this winter still remain to be seen, and we do probably need more concrete measures and a stronger campaign to really see an impact in addition to just the impact of higher gas prices.
Okay, well, look, thanks, Anouk. That's really interesting. And I think it is a very good example of how one country, which is very exposed to Russian gas, is at least starting to address the issue and get all consumers to try and focus on reducing demand over the winter. And thanks, too, to Jack and Mike for your input on both the supply and storage issue, and Mike, your analysis of prices and the issues in Central and Eastern Europe, particularly, and also LNG. So with that, thank you very much indeed for listening. We'll be back soon with further updates, particularly from Mike on his new research. Please do look out for that on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. But with that, please do stay healthy, keep listening, and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity, or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org. Thank you.